Good morning. Actually, good afternoon, everyone. Howard Wolfson with the Clinton Campaign. I'm the campaign's communications director. With me today is Mark Penn, our chief strategist, who will be discussing why we believe we're best able to take on John McCain in the fall, and we'll have a memo to the same effect at the conclusion of the call, which we will send around. After Mark speaks, we'll be happy to take your questions on this or other topics, and if Mark has to jump off, I will stay on and do my best to answer whatever questions you have. So with that, Mark?
Thanks, Howard. I think the topic we want to cover today is that we believe that Hillary Clinton is, in the long run, better positioned to take on John McCain and to win in the general election. And to really understand that, you have to fast forward, you know, to what could happen depending upon who is the nominee. You know, I think the first thing that we've seen time and time again is that the GOP attack machine, you know, redefines the Democratic candidate. Hillary has withstood this process. She's been through it. And this will make a tremendous difference if she is the nominee. The attack machine has been built and honed over decades. It's formidable. It commands a vast media network, and it has been able to skew the perceptions even of such distinguished public servants and well-respected Democrats as Al Gore and John Kerry, creating impressions out of them very quickly that were out of step with reality. She, we believe, has withstood the full brunt of this kind of attack and be able to neutralize what is likely to happen, particularly with a nominee who is not as well known through public life as Hillary Clinton is. Second, we think that national security against Senator McCain will be an important issue and that she wins that argument when it comes to national security. In the past, strong and wrong has won out over right and weak, and that will not be the issue with Hillary based on what we know of her and what people think of her and her experience. Voters regard her as ready to be commander-in-chief, and that makes her both a commander-in-chief who is both ready to assume the full duties and understands from the Armed Services Committee how the military works and is ready to pursue the policies of ending the war in Iraq and reestablishing our relationships with our allies makes her strong and right, and that strong and right will be strong and wrong in an upcoming general election. And she will be able to block them from playing the national security card. I think you already see the Republicans and President Bush trying to play the national security card against Senator Obama. Third, I think that you've seen a lot of talk about negatives and positives. I think what we've seen when you go back historically is that Senator Obama's negatives will rise. He himself has been saying that he, even after a year, is not particularly well-known in places like Texas and Florida and Ohio. So how much do independent voters really know about Barack Obama, his voting record, and his past positions? Certainly less than Democrats know. For example, he took a recent trip to Idaho in which he told the voters there that he favors the Second Amendment. He didn't mention that he previously voted for things like one gun a month, but not because you were not mentioning this because of the position he took, but in a general election, the Republican would spring into action and quickly, if he were the nominee, roll out his full record. And the kind of independent support that you see in places like Idaho would consequently evaporate. So we think that once Senator Obama would find himself in that kind of environment, the kind of independent support that he's had so far would evaporate relatively quickly once he faced the Republicans because of them filling in the totality of his record. We also think the resiliency of his coalition will be tested compared to her coalition. Certainly, you know, we've seen situations where the primary season creates an enormous amount of enthusiasm for whoever is the nominee, and that those things then tend to be tested through the course of the general election. Hillary has built an extremely powerful base among women and Latino voters, and if you go back and look at the previous general election in 2004, those voters were the critical voters in terms of what tipped the election in 2004. The fact that President Bush got close to 40% of the Hispanic vote and took security-minded women. Hillary Clinton has a coalition of voters well-suited to winning the general election, and she's done extremely well in rural areas in places like Missouri, where she took 110 of 115 counties. And then finally, a lot of current polls, you know, based on enthusiasm or momentum, in those polls, we think don't actually represent the situation that we would see in a general election. After winning the Democratic nomination in 2004, Kerry had a 17-point lead over George Bush. Even on election day in 2004, virtually every pollster said Kerry would win. It didn't happen. Today, commentators are touting, you know, they have been touting a time poll that shows Obama faring better than Hillary Clinton. Last week, they were all touting polls that showed her losing in Massachusetts, New Jersey, California, and those things didn't happen. So a warning on basing things that come out of the polls. I worked with Senator Clinton in 2000, in which everyone said she would, in fact, lose her election to New York, and again, won in a landslide. So she has consistently shown an electoral resiliency, against in difficult situations that has made her a winner. Senator Obama, in fact, has never had a serious Republican challenger. So with those as basic observations, you know, our conclusion is that Senator Clinton will be a better potential nominee, she'll have a better coalition, she'll be able to block the national security card from being played, she'll have a stronger appeal to voters who will make a difference in the general election, and she is ready and able to take on Senator McCain. So with that, Howard, any points you want to add?
No, I think that you've covered it well. At this point, I'd be happy to throw it open to questions if folks have any on this topic or other topics.
Okay, participants, if you have a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. This will place your question in the order it was received. Once again, if you have a question, please press *1 now. And we'll go ahead and take our first question.
Howard Marks, Major Garrett at Fox.
Hey, how are you?
Fine. How are you? I know, Mark, you just said fast forward, but doesn't the campaign confront a pretty dire scenario the next 3 or 4 weeks based on what certainly the polling indicates is likely to happen tomorrow? And the Obama campaign, whether it reasonably or unreasonably, feels very good about Wisconsin. Don't you, in the more immediate term, face something that is somewhat dire as you approach Texas and Ohio if the momentum that has propelled Obama through this weekend continues through Tuesday and on through the following Tuesday up until those very important contests for your campaign?
Well, I think we expected that this would be a very difficult period for us. I think what you had on Super Tuesday was you had a number of very big states put together with a range of other states and caucuses where Senator Obama did well. But I think the net effect was that you saw her tremendous strength. And in effect now we have spread out a number of states. We've had a lot of caucuses here that will then be followed by big states that will be critical to us as we look to Ohio, Texas, and ultimately Pennsylvania. There will be more electoral votes decided in Ohio and Texas than will have been decided in all these other contests. So we also think that there is time, as we've seen, we've continually gone from the situation where it looks like Senator Obama is quite strong and momentum is going to carry the day, where the voters take another look and decide instead that Hillary Clinton, you know, is the best one to be president. So we believe that that's what will happen yet again in this race.
I mean, I think, Major, it's Howard, that both campaigns have said publicly, and I know they say privately as well, that this is going to be a nomination fight that will go on through the spring and likely to Denver. This is going to be a better month for Barack Obama than it is going to be for us. We believe that next month will be a better month for us than it will be for him. But the bottom line is that the delegate race is extremely close. We've apportioned out, some total somewhat over 2,000 delegates. They're separated, the two candidates are separated by a handful, and that sort of seesaw between the two on the delegate count is likely to continue this month and after the contests on March 4th. So I think both sides have prepared for a lengthy contest. As Mark said, this will be a better month for Senator Obama than it will be for us. We believe next month will be a better month for us than it will be for him.
Okay, we'll take the next question.
Hi, this is Leanne Caldwell with Pacifica Radio. What will the campaign do if Obama sweeps all three states tomorrow, especially Virginia? Will there be any change of tactics, or how do you see it going forward?
Again, I think, as you recall, like Senator Obama, had the finances to play hard, to play earlier in the states after Super Tuesday. We didn't. We've now got over $10 million coming in on the internet alone. We have the resources to play, and I think that we are expecting, as I think both campaigns have expected, that he's going to do very well, this month and in these states. And we've seen that the voters will then take another look, and we expect that we have the resources to play in the big states and that we will be successful in those states.
Okay, we'll take the next question.
Hi, it's Susan Milligan from the Boston Globe. Just to follow up on the last one, I mean, do you expect the message to change at all? I mean, do you expect maybe more of a focus on kind of like working class issues as she goes into Ohio and Pennsylvania? I mean, will the basic message change the same and just sort of focusing on getting your base out in those states?
Well, I think that she has been very much talking about, solutions for the economy and for how you help the working class for really quite some time, all the way back to her first economic speech in New Hampshire, where she outlined the program for shared prosperity. We've had a very strong outpouring of support from the working class. There is a growing economic crisis in the country, and she will strongly connect how we solve that crisis in ways that help the working class, no question about it.
Okay, we'll take the next question.
Hi, it's Rebecca Roberts from XM Radio's POTUS 08. I just wanted to know what you think Maggie Williams will bring to the campaign that is different from Patty Silas Doyle.
Well, I think, this is Howard, as Hillary said in her statement, she could not have asked for a better campaign manager than Patty. Patty has been an enormous asset to this campaign and will continue to be an asset to this campaign in the context of her ongoing advisory role. Maggie has been friends with Senator Clinton for well over a decade. She was her chief of staff in the White House. She and Patty are, of course, longtime friends, and I think she will be able to step in and seamlessly perform the responsibilities of campaign manager going forward. But both Patty and Maggie have been very strong in their longtime service to Senator Clinton. Patty did a magnificent job as campaign manager, and now Maggie is stepping in to assume those responsibilities, and she will also do a fabulous job.
Okay, we'll take our next question.
Hi, it's Tom Baldwin from the Times of London. Can you just explain exactly how your strategy looking forward towards Texas and Ohio is different to that of Rudy Giuliani, who was looking towards Florida for such a long time when everyone else was fighting up?
Yes. Yeah, I got that question a couple of times today. I mean, the key difference is I'm not aware that Rudy Giuliani won California and New York and Oklahoma and Tennessee and Arkansas and Arizona and New Mexico prior to the Florida primary. Those are all states that we won on Super Tuesday. We won New Jersey and Massachusetts as well. We also won Nevada and Florida and Michigan and New Hampshire. So Senator Clinton has a long track record within the last several months of winning key contested states that she was not supposed to win, states that Senator Obama had significant political advantages in, like Arizona and Massachusetts. Red states like Tennessee and Arkansas and Oklahoma. She has won in suburban areas, in urban areas, in rural areas. And so this is a campaign with a track record of success in states from coast to coast, from north to south, to east to west, and everywhere in between, red and blue. And that's the difference, that we have built winning coalitions. We have won critical states. We are in a tie for delegates, essentially, and there is no reason to believe that we will not continue to be successful in the all-important states of Texas and Ohio based on the track record so far.
Okay, take our next question.
Hey, it's Chris Smith at New York Magazine. If this continues to be close throughout the spring, possibly into August, regarding the delegate count, it's likely that who's ever slightly behind is going to come under enormous pressure to unite the party, to not, you know, fight it down to the very end so as to not split the party and affect electability against the Republicans. Do you see that as a tough argument to counter, and do you expect that to happen if the delegate race stays close?
Well, look, I think that we will be ahead in the delegate race after Texas and Ohio. So if there are going to be calls like that, they'll be interesting to see. Look, I think that everyone understands that this is going to be a long, closely contested battle for the nomination, and that the party will come together at the conclusion of that contest. There's no question about that. And I think that the delegate battle will go back and forth. I think we will be ahead after Texas and Ohio, and we believe that we will have the delegates necessary to secure the nomination in Denver. But I don't think this is ever going to be a significant lead for either candidate.
Okay, we'll take our next question. Okay.
Hi, Neil Goswami from the Bennington Banner in Vermont. I'm just curious, with the delegate count so close, what resources are you putting from your campaign into Vermont, and will the candidate appear here in Vermont?
We, of course, are focusing on the contest tomorrow, and then, as you know, Wisconsin, and then, of course, Vermont in the beginning of March. We have not scheduled out that far yet. Vermont obviously is a critically important state, but no resource allocation decisions have been made at this time. I don't know, Mark, if you have additional thoughts on that, or if Mark may have had to jump off. Next question.
I'm on, but that's
oh.
Okay. We'll take the next question.
Hi, this is Sergio Davila with Brazilian Folha. There is talking going on about a revolt in Florida and Michigan. How would the senator react to that decision if the party goes for that?
Well, our position is that Florida and Michigan have voted the largest turnout in the history of the Florida Democratic Party occurred at the Florida primary, Floridians and Michigan Democrats have expressed their preferences already, and it's our position that those preferences ought to be given a considerable weight when the nomination heads to Denver. We are urging our delegates to seat the delegations of Michigan and Florida, and we think that's what should happen.
Okay, we'll take the next question. Yes, Amy Chizik from the Wall Street Journal. Okay, we'll take our next question then.
Hey, Howard, this is Tom Schauer from the Baltimore Sun.
Hey.
I was wondering, 2000, Bush sort of surrounded himself with, I wouldn't quite call it a shadow cabinet. This is an American, not a European election, but he sort of showed Powell and some other people around him. And I know Senator Clinton has a lot of endorsees, but, you know, as things get tighter, and if they remain tight, as you say that they will, and they probably will, is there any chance that you guys might do something unconventional that's within the party rules, like picking a vice presidential candidate or signaling in a way what cabinet members would look like in a future Clinton administration or something to reaffirm the sort of notion that ready to lead?
I will throw that over to our senior strategist. Mark, what do you think?
I think we're always open to something that could be different and unconventional. I think we've done things like hold the largest national town hall in presidential history to make our candidacy people-oriented. But I'm not going to speculate on any specifics of what we might or might not.
Okay, we'll take our next question.
Hi, it's Lynn Sweet from the Chicago Sun-Times. Can you give us a debrief on the meeting that Senator Clinton had with Edwards? Senator Obama has a meeting with him tonight, and what do you think is his timetable?
Well, I don't want to speak for Senator Edwards with regard to his timetable. Obviously, that'll be up to him. Senator Clinton did have a good meeting with him. I'm not going to get into the details as it was a private meeting, but Senator Clinton has an enormous amount of respect for Senator Edwards, for the focus that he brought in this campaign to issues like poverty, to his focus on the middle class, I'll leave it at that.
Okay, we'll take our next question.
Hi, it's Steve Collinson with AFP. To what extent are the poll leads you currently have in places like Ohio, Texas, Pennsylvania insulated from, you know, Obama's momentum that he might pick up by sweeping the next few nominating contests? Is the sort of coalition you have there sort of a bulwark against that? Is it immune to being changed by momentum, or is, you know, is it under threat?
Well, again, I think we've seen, no doubt, I think, depending upon what happens, I think that there will be another, large media outpouring behind Senator Obama, as we've seen, virtually, after after all the wins. Yet, as we saw, New Hampshire was quite different from Iowa. We saw that despite kind of a week of complete domination of the media with Cowherman and Ted Kennedy, despite polls that showed us losing in so many states, despite exit polls on the day of the election showed us losing many of the states that we won. In fact, I think the voters and that there will be a little bit of a pause here. Part of this problem with the schedule is that we have very, very compressed schedule. There will be a little of a pause here for, I think, the voters to step back, take a look at the two choices, see them side by side. We, again, challenged Senator Obama to a debate before Wisconsin, and even though 8 million people saw the last debate, he continues to say that he's, quote, going to see more voters out by not debating, which is not a proposition that actually supports with the facts, since the voters are quite eager to see them side by side. But there will be a number of side-by-side encounters that I think will give the voters a clear choice, and that when the voters have that clear choice between someone who's ready to be president on day one and who will be able to make the changes we need happen versus Senator Obama, we have seen that choice made in our favor. So we think there's time for that choice to be made and for our coalition, I think, to remain strong and ultimately victorious. Even if the polls change adversely against us, the polls have done that a number of times, but we expect to be winners of the ballot box.
Let me just also add that I hope those of you on this call who are in the D.C. area will watch Senator Clinton on WJLA this evening, local Channel 7. WJLA, in addition to Fox, had offered debate opportunities to both candidates for this evening. We accepted both. Senator Obama accepted neither. We are going to be taking questions on WJLA, so voters in this region will still get an opportunity to see Senator Clinton, but it is unfortunate that Senator Obama has consistently refused to these debate requests. He has essentially refused to debate before the Chesapeake primary, and now he is apparently refusing to debate before the Wisconsin primary, and that's unfortunate.
Okay, we'll take our next question.
Hi, this is Erica Jones from Inside Edition. And the campaign has indicated that it may not participate in the upcoming MSNBC debate. Have any decisions been made on that front?
No.
May I ask a follow-up?
Sure. Okay. Yes, that was a quick answer. Yes.
Their email exchanges between Clinton's press secretary and MSNBC suggest that Schuster initially refused to apologize. Did that and does that compound the problem?
You know, I appreciate the question. I'm glad you asked the follow-up. You know, this is not about Mr. Schuster per se. What he said was outrageous and offensive, and NBC took the action that they did. But our primary, and that was appropriate. What our primary concern here is a pattern of behavior that has occurred at this network over a period of some time, and so it goes well beyond anything that occurred last week, and is about a pattern that has occurred at the network over some period of time, and that we will be addressed in an appropriate fashion. So, you know, what NBC does or does not decide to do in this particular instance is obviously up to them, but there ought to be some examination there of what clearly appears to be a pattern of behavior over a period of time.
Okay, we'll take our next question.
I'm dropping off here.
Okay.
This is Jessica Werman from the Dayton Daily News. I'm kind of following up on that, so I'm glad that the other reporter had asked that. So when you say no, the February 26th debate in Cleveland, is it off? Is it on? Is it in the air?
We had previously agreed to a CNN debate that would be held in Ohio. So we have agreed to a debate in Ohio. I'm not aware that Senator Obama's campaign has agreed to that debate. There is no change in our posture vis-a-vis the MSNBC debate since last week when Senator Clinton was asked when she said that she does not envision currently participating in a debate on that network. There are other networks. There will be other opportunities, and that is what we hope that there will be debates. We are obviously eager for there to be debates. We were hoping to have a debate this evening. We're hoping to have a debate in Wisconsin. We expect to have a debate in Ohio and Texas as well.
Okay, we'll take our next question.
Hey, it's Craig Gilbert with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Why is Wisconsin routinely lumped in with these other February states that are supposed to be favorable to Obama? It doesn't have a large African-American population like some of these other contests, and it's not a caucus state. In fact, the turnout's projected to be really big. So why is it something other than a level playing field?
Well, look, we are going to compete in Wisconsin. We hope to do well in Wisconsin. I think that Senator Obama does have some advantages in Wisconsin due to the open nature of the primary. If you look at the analysis, the exit poll analysis of other states, you will see that is the case. But we certainly, you know, we certainly are going to do everything we can to do as well as we can in Wisconsin, and that will begin, in our opinion, by having a debate in Wisconsin that folks there can watch before they come out and vote.
Okay, we'll take our next question.
Hi, it's Christina with the Washington Times. I'm curious, if you look at the superdelegates, and you have some people saying that allowing them to choose the nominee if you guys are still tied when they have to make their decision is kind of an elitist stance, and it's not really letting the people speak. Can you weigh in on that?
Yes. I would. I'm going to pull it up, I want to be exact with it. But I agree very much with my friend David Axelrod this morning when he said that he believed that the superdelegates ought to choose to support the candidate that they believe would be the best president and would be the best nominee of our party. He was asked on the Today Show what he thought about the role of superdelegates, and let me read you exactly what he said. I think that the role of the superdelegate is to act as sort of a party elder. These are elected officials from across the country, and they're supposed to exercise their judgment as to what would be best for the party. And as they look at this, they need to decide who would be the strongest candidate for the party. And then he makes a case for why he believes Obama would be that person. And then he gets asked the question again, and he says, I think they... Well, he's asked whether or not senators from Massachusetts should vote for Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. And he says, I think they and all the superdelegates should vote according to what they think is best for the party and the country. And I think that we need the strongest possible candidate against John McCain. And then he goes on to make the case why he believes Senator Obama would be the strongest possible candidate against John McCain, but which obviously we disagree with. But we very much agree that the superdelegates are supposed to... are supposed to exercise their judgment as to what would be best for the party. And as they look at this, they need to decide who would be the strongest candidate for the party. I think they and all the superdelegates should vote according to what they think is best for the party and the country. We are in complete and total agreement on that. So both the Obama campaigns and the Clinton campaigns believe that the role of the superdelegates is exactly the same, which is to exercise their judgment as to what would be best for the party and to support the person that they believe is best for the party in the country.
Okay, we'll take our next question.
Hey, Howard, it's John Dickerson from Slate.
Hey.
Two quick questions. One, can you talk about the specific elements of durability in Ohio and Texas? I mean, other than kind of the fact that we've had this ebb and flow, momentum of Obama suddenly stopped by other states, is there some specificity in terms of what makes Clinton durable there? And just on the NBC thing, what's the pattern that's alleged here?
Well, I think with regard to NBC, you have an instance where it's the only network that I'm aware of where in the course of this campaign you've had a firing, a suspension, and an on-air apology in three different instances from three different people. And so without getting into the names and the particulars, everyone I think on this call is familiar with the record. And I'm not aware of any of the other networks where there is such a history like that. With regard to Ohio and Texas, you know, I think, you know, much is made of this notion of momentum. And I think despite the conversation about it, everything that we've seen in this primary season actually suggests the opposite, that there is really no momentum. I mean, this weekend, I don't know what Republican would have had more momentum than John McCain going into this weekend's contest. And he did not exactly run away with this weekend's contest. You had Mike Huckabee with a strong showing. We came out of Iowa having lost to Senator Obama. Senator Obama came into New Hampshire with supposedly enormous amount of momentum. He got an enormous amount of publicity out of his win from Iowa, and he lost New Hampshire. We won Nevada, and we lost in South Carolina. So I don't think there is any evidence to suggest that voters are voting on the basis of quote-unquote momentum. I think, in fact, the evidence is to the contrary, that voters in different states are assessing these races differently for different reasons, depending on who they are and what they're observing. But I don't think that there is any evidence in the cycle to suggest that there is a stampede one way or another. In fact, at least in the Democratic contest, all the evidence is the opposite. We essentially have a campaign that has gone on since January of 2007, the longest campaign in the history of American presidential politics, and we're essentially in a tie ball game. So contrary to the notion that voters are being swept away by momentum, what voters are doing is making assessments based on their own beliefs, their own judgments, their own sense of these candidates, one at a time, individually, and momentum is really not playing the role.
Okay, we'll take our next question.
Hi, this is Jibby Martinez for Politico. I was wondering about a comment you made at the beginning of the call about the Latino vote in Texas. And you were talking about women and Latinos being very solid for you. And obviously the numbers show that so far. But, you know, since we do have this pause, and Obama always, his campaign always makes the argument that once people get to know him, they like him. Does he have time to cut into your support? And are you at all worried about his being able to take anything away from y'all in Texas with regard to the Latino vote?
Look, we certainly don't take anything for granted, and we're going to be reaching out to every community, asking for every voter for their vote. So it would be foolish for us to take anything for granted, and we don't take anything for granted. But if you look at the results so far in this election, and I think at this point, as you know, many of you on this call have noted, we now have a fair amount of data that we can form judgments about and extrapolate as to who is supporting who more than not. This is a coalition that has proven fairly durable for Senator Clinton in many different contests at different points in the process. So we don't take anything for granted, but we feel good about going into Texas and Ohio.
Okay, we'll take our next question. Yes, Alexis Simondon. All right, we'll take our next question.
Hi, it's Brian Tumulty from Gannett News Service. A little bit more on Wisconsin. Know a little bit about the state. We have 10 papers there. And outside of Madison, which is, Obama territory because of UW-Madison, it's largely a blue-collar state where there's a lot of manufacturing, like in Ohio and Indiana and other Midwestern states. And I'm just wondering whether you think this is potentially a good state for Senator Clinton. And if Senator Clinton can't win in those congressional districts, those seven other congressional districts, or six of them anyhow, why she would do well in Ohio and not Wisconsin?
Well, as I said, I think we're going to look at Wisconsin closely. We're going to do everything we can to compete there. I think there is there is certainly evidence, public polling, that suggests we are well positioned in Ohio and Texas. I'm not aware that there has been as much public polling done in Wisconsin. We're going to do, you know, what we can to compete there. At this point, I think a lot of the focus of this month was on the contest this weekend and, of course, the contest on Tuesday. But we are very much looking forward to Wisconsin, and we'll certainly do what we can to compete there. And I certainly do think that we will. There are certainly many parts of Wisconsin that we will do well in, as you suggest.
Okay, we'll take our next question.
Hi, I'm Corinne Lund from Le Monde newspaper. One of the questions that was at the beginning of the campaign was, are the American people ready for women president? So when you hear some comments now or some reactions, would you say that feminists have still work to do in this country?
Well, look, I mean, Senator Clinton always says, you know, people say they wonder whether we can, you know, elect a woman president. And she says, you know, we don't know unless we try. And that's what we are engaged here in a historic effort to determine, at least in this cycle, whether or not we're going to be in a position to elect a woman. We believe that the American people will make their assessments based on who they think is the best president, who they think would be the best person to lead the country, and we believe that they will come to the conclusion that is Hillary Clinton. But it is clearly a historic effort we are engaged in. It is clearly uncharted waters, largely for this country, and you know, the Senator Clinton herself always says, as I said, that we will not know unless we try, and so we are trying, and we feel good about the way the campaign has gone, and the way the American people are receiving Senator Clinton's candidacy. But the outcome will be yet to be determined.
Okay, we'll take our next question.
Yes, hello, this is Philippe Remarque, the Volkskrant, the Netherlands. I was wondering, following up on the Michigan seating of the delegates of Michigan, Barack Obama didn't compete in that election, and how do I explain my readers that somebody who didn't compete in the election, how this can be honest and democratic is more something you would expect of Belarus?
What about Florida? Would you say that is the case, or would you just respond that way to Michigan?
Yes,
I'm sorry. I was curious. Would you make the same argument for Florida, or are you just making that argument?
No, I'm just pointing out Michigan because in Florida Obama was on the ballot.
Okay. The decision to take his name off the ballot in Michigan was Senator Obama's. The pledge that the candidate signed not to campaign in those states did not require that. It was a decision that he made. Despite that fact, there was, as has been reported, some considerable amount of politicking going on his behalf there. There were organized efforts to encourage people to vote uncommitted, and uncommitted did receive, I think, roughly 40% of the vote. So Senator Obama would be in a position to pick up some percentage of those delegates. But there was a very large turnout in Michigan. There was obviously an even larger turnout in Florida. And folks had the option in Michigan of voting either for Senator Clinton or voting uncommitted. I think there was a pretty good sense in Michigan about what voting for Senator Clinton meant and what voting for uncommitted meant. And people reacted accordingly. And in Florida, of course, as you say, everybody's name was on the ballot. Nobody had an advantage there with regard to campaigning other than Senator Obama, who had been running cable ads across the country that people in Florida were viewing. And there we won a decisive victory in a primary that was the largest turnout Democratic primary in the history of the Florida Democratic primary. So we believe that people in those states have spoken. They did come out to vote in large numbers. And that their preferences ought to be honored. Let me take, if I can, maybe one or two more, and then, of course, I'm happy to have a follow-up when folks have additional questions.
Okay, we'll take our next question.
Hey, Howard, it's Josh Gerstein at the New York Sun. I wanted to ask about this follow-up on that superdelegates question. Do you think it's going to be possible for either candidate to win based solely on pledged delegates? And what does your delegate team tell you about the media counts right now? Are they generally viewed as accurate or off the mark or in the ballpark or what? Thanks.
Good questions. No, I don't think that either candidate will be able to get to 2025 without the votes of superdelegates. In fact, I think we're coming to the point where it's almost statistically impossible, given the way that our delegates are apportioned in the primaries on the Democratic side. So I think either candidate will need the support of the superdelegates in order to get to 2025, which is the number one needs to secure the nomination. There are a lot of different, as to the second question, there are a lot of different counts that I have seen with regard to delegates. They are mostly different numbers, but they are not dissimilar with regard to the gap. The gaps tend to be fairly similar. And I think some are probably a little bit closer than others, but I don't recall seeing any that are wildly off. If you want to, follow up with me offline, if there are any in particular you have questions about, we can talk about it. But I don't recall seeing any that are wildly off. And as long as we're talking about superdelegates again, I want to make sure that everybody got what David Axelrod said this morning about the role of superdelegates on the Today Show, because there is clearly broad agreement between the Clinton campaign and the Obama campaign as to the role that superdelegates ought to be playing. He said, quote, "I think that the role of the superdelegate is to act as sort of a party elder. These are elected officials from across the country, and they're supposed to exercise their judgment as to what would be best for the party. And as they look at this, they need to decide who would be the strongest candidate for the party." And then there's a he makes a case for Obama. Follow-up question. "I think they," there he's referring to Kennedy and Kerry, "and all the superdelegates should vote according to what they think is best for the party and the country, and I think that we need the strongest possible candidate against John McCain." So taking David at his word, and he is a man of his word, there is a broad agreement as to the role of the superdelegates between the Clinton campaign and the Obama campaign. And why don't we take one more question, and then we'll wrap it up. And if there are additional questions, please feel free to comment or get to me offline.
Okay. We'll take our last question from Kit Seeley from the New York Times.
Hi, Howard. Thanks. Sorry, I missed the beginning of this call, so maybe you've addressed this. But I was wondering what your analysis was of what happened in Maine yesterday. You know, the demographics were on your side, and the margin was pretty steep between the
yeah.
candidates.
Thank you for the question. I think if you look at the track record now, in all of these campaigns, in all of these primaries and caucuses, Senator Obama has done a better job in caucuses than he has vis-a-vis us anyway in primaries. And we do better in primaries where large numbers of voters vote, where you have maximum numbers of voters coming out, where voters have all day from 8 or 9 in the morning until 8 or 9 at night to come out and express their preferences, caucuses, I think, provide Senator Obama with an advantage. Primaries where you have the maximum number of people voting and participating tend to give us somewhat of an advantage relative to caucuses. If you look at, for instance, California and Florida and New York and New Jersey, the primary the contests where the largest numbers of people participate, with the exception of Illinois, which is Senator Obama's home state, tend to favor us relative to caucuses. Even if you throw out New York, because that obviously is our home state, we do better. Where the more people who vote, the better we do. So that, I think, explains yesterday's contest. And with that, I appreciate everybody's time. I know everybody's time is valuable, and it's good of you to spend so much of it with us. And if there are questions or comments, please feel free to email. I've already gotten a couple emails in the midst of this conversation. I'm sure there'll be a few more, and we'll follow up with all of you shortly. Thank you, everybody.